Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CoinPass podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Hancock, where we talk about blockchain, fintech, and everything crypto. Today, we have a very special guest from the BCB Group. BCB, Europe's leading banking partner for blockchain companies, and they're specialized in trading, FX, crypto, bank accounts, and custody, as well as settlement between their customers. That's a very, very special point. We're going to come to that towards the end. My guest today is Ben Sebley. He's a partner at BCB Group, and he runs growth. I assume that means sales, Ben. And prior to that, he was in sales, there you go, sales trader at an investment bank before co-funding an investment and advisory firm in the blockchain space. Ben, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming along.
Thanks, Jeff. Pleasure to be here, mate.
So today we're talking about kind of the future of banking and the future of banking for businesses on blockchain and for blockchain. Tell us a little bit about yourself, a little about your background, you know, and kind of how you got involved in crypto.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, as you sort of mentioned, I was kind of young man in banking and sort of joined quite late in my career, and then just saw banking basically collapse around me, which isn't obviously ideal when you change careers. And sort of simultaneous to noticing that, I also noticed the price of Bitcoin and that going up, and it started hitting mainstream press. And really just thought, wow, wouldn't it be nice to be in a growth industry where people are excited about it and there's no witch hunts and redundancy rounds every sort of 3 months. So I left and helped set up a investment advisory firm for the blockchain space with a few other really amazing people. And BCB was always on my radar. The founders were good friends. And luckily we ended up investing in BCB seed round. And it made sense for me to sort of come over and help them more formally about a year ago. So the rest is history for now, mate. It's been a bit of a wild ride.
Yeah, and I suppose, yeah, we were in a very similar boat. You know, I was always in tech. I was always in infrastructure. I was doing a few different things. But crypto was kind of something, even in, you know, 2017, it was still, you know, even newer and even, you know, less prominent than say, less now. That's only 3 years ago. And I remember we met the BCB guys quite early on. When it was still very, very skeleton grew, and seeing you know, your company grow to kind of the scale that it is now in such a short period of time has been very, very impressive. So when we talk about crypto, we talk about banking, and they meet in the middle. Kind of what are some of the challenges, I suppose, in your mind that BCB has solved, but also that you think is still quite prevalent in the financial services industry?
Yeah, sure. So well, effectively, we set ourselves up initially to just be a trading desk to help sort of kind of larger institutional clients get access to more managed execution. And really quickly, we realized that basically the hardest part about crypto is not trading, it's just getting robust, reliable banking. So we ended up kind of setting up all this crazy infrastructure just for ourselves. And we realized it was such a pain, and we were on our way to being regulated, that we could actually solve this for other people. And we've pretty much taken that approach to everything else. So kind of the first thing we solved was being able to give bank accounts to kind of crypto firms, you know, not a small achievement. And then the next thing we've sort of kind of like ticked off the list and really kind of gone by client demand. So it's now a case of bundling products that clients want, whether it's sort of FX trading, whether it's hunting for yield, you know, crypto custody, a full API stack. It's just ticking down that list to try and give what is essentially a really basic service to really high tech companies that can't get that service. And it's quite weird because, you know, even just to do the very vanilla, give you a bank account that works, that you can connect your exchange to, it's pretty impossible. You know, there's only a couple of people out there that do it. You know, the US is really well served with sort of Silvergate. But in Europe, we found that there was basically nothing. So we kind of slotted in there and got quite lucky in the process, to be honest.
Oh, really cool. And I suppose from those experiences in, say, you know, building up a service not for yourselves and saying like, hey, we're solving the problem for ourselves, we can solve it for everybody else as well. Where in kind of, maybe this is somewhere between your vision and your mission of like, where do you feel the trajectory of finance kind of could go in kind of a glass half full sort of analogy?
I think what's really interesting at the minute is now we're at the stage where basically the crypto industry those that have survived have seen the crypto winter. They've built the infrastructure. There's now regulatory clarity. So we're now at a point where, you know, the industry's not going away. It's being taken seriously. And things in the industry, things like stablecoins, things like yield, are the really, really kind of things that were deemed crazy can now actually help traditional industry. So it's basically looking where crypto meets traditional and sort of how it straddles it, how it's managed. That's sort of where we think the future is. I mean, what was really, really heartening to see was just some of our clients, you know, normal clients, not crypto clients, using stablecoins to solve real world problems, using crypto to solve real world problems, you know, completely legally. But that really kind of hit home that, you know, we're doing something right, but we just need to sort of be there and solve the really basic problems first. So we've still got kind of a ways to go to make sure those kind of basic stuff is solved. But we're now starting to see, you know, the green shoots of basically what could be. Instant settlement for one. So we've launched our sort of Blink network, which is basically all our customers are able to, you know, settle any asset instantly, real time between them. That's great because, you know, even now a traditional fund could send US dollars from Hong Kong to US dollar account in New York. It still takes 2 days, which is mad. But this is where I think crypto is sort of coming in to help sort of traditional payments. And that's the really exciting bit. But having said that, the industry changes every 6 months, so it'll probably really change by next kind of February when we come out of lockdown.
And you spoke just a really, really quick point there around you know, regulatory certainty. A lot of, I suppose, upgrades and narrative improvements have been happening this year, specifically in the UK, around the FCA and specifically AML 5D. Have you seen, you know, a kind of fundamental shift, I suppose, in some of your clients or some of the way that they are doing business or some of the way that the FCA is trying to, you know, create regulatory certainty in the UK for crypto firms that want to keep offering the services?
So, I mean, that's been a really interesting one because actually what we've seen traditionally is that regulatory certainty and clarity is what everyone craves. You know, the more these are the rules, the more people know we can play by it and the more we get accepted by outsiders. So that's great. And I have to say the FCA have done a pretty good job compared to other jurisdictions. That being said, you know, you mentioned AML5D. You know, where we have seen sort of a general increase in more generalized compliance requirements by regulators across Europe, that led to a lot of kind of the major players, major retail banks that were sort of dipping their toes into crypto to actually turn their backs. I think they realized sort of they didn't understand the industry. They'd given it a go. You know, there's so much extra of a compliance need that if you're not a specialist, the juice sort of isn't worth the squeeze. So weirdly, you know, even with regulatory clarity helping crypto companies themselves and what they do, we're seeing it harder to get banking for crypto companies. You know, the most basic thing that, you know, any company needs is the ability to sort of pay their staff, to pay other people, to pay merchants, vendors, you know, to be able to collect clients' money. And the providers, which are sort of keen and happy to do that and understand it, have really, really slipped away. So, I mean, great news for us, but it just shows you that there's still, you know, still a really long way to go and before, you know, these bigger companies are sort of happy with regulation.
Yeah. And no, that's obviously a very real shame there because one thing that I suppose is an opportunity here, we've got Brexit just around the corner now. It's November 2020. There's a, you know, a massive opportunity, you know, for, you know, the people that want to be the optimist and always try and work towards positivity is that, you know, the UK as a fintech hub already has an even bigger opportunity to attract even more business than we've ever kind of had before. The recent news about the Rishi saying about the capital gains doubling up, I'm not sure that's a good one. That might deter a lot of people, but hopefully it doesn't go through. But the opportunity that, you know, London specifically has always been, you know, a financial hub for investment, for trade, for, you know, pure networking opportunities as well. I don't think our business, and I'm sure you may agree, wouldn't be kind of where they are now without being in a place with such a healthy, you know, financial services community and the crypto community and everything that goes with that. You can go out to an event and run into, you know, decision-making people that can kind of, you know, really, really help you along your journey. But we have to kind of assume, we have to kind of hope that with some of this clarity that will come in January 10, that it will start to turn that sort of appetite around for, you know, not just businesses that want to serve people, but for regular retail clients that just want a little bit of Bitcoin exposure. We see them over and over again in our business at CoinPass getting punished over and over for wanting to buy more than £1,000 worth and having to get on the phone and certify with the bank what they're doing and et cetera, et cetera. And it's almost kind of like a commonplace now that that's the thing, the normal thing you have to do to get into crypto. And it's not helping the industry. And maybe that's maybe one of the bank's ploys.
I would definitely, it's interesting you say that. I mean, a lot of other providers will ask for KYC for every payment before they release it for most crypto companies. You know, we work really hard to make sort of compliance the forefront of everything we do. So our clients can just use their accounts as you'd want to use it.
Exactly.
And back to your sort of point about kind of what's happening with Brexit. I mean, it's sort of a very new thing, but from what I've seen, you know, certainly kind of in the banking space first, everyone was worried that everyone would leave London, they'd go to Frankfurt, they'd go to, you know, Paris, wherever. It simply hasn't happened. Companies might have used their sort of it as an excuse to kind of smallen down the staff and the footprint they've got in London. But London's always going to be, you know, that GMT time zone. It's bang in the middle of Asia. It's bang in the middle of sort of America. And certainly in the last year, in late 2019 and certainly start of this year, we noticed something really, really interesting. The big crypto companies all started opening their London offices. You know, they pretty much picked, in spite of the Brexit news, they started opening London offices. So fantastic to see. It certainly feels like they picked London for good reason. And yeah, Brexit's a concern, but you know, everyone can deal with it properly. And clearly, you know, the UK is taking quite a pro-crypto approach, and we don't see Brexit as harming it. Now, we have a Brexit hedge strategy, everyone does, but we still very much see London remaining the sort of the kind of crypto and financial hub, if you like.
Yeah. And, you know, with some of the more interesting stuff that's coming out, and I see these as very long-term topics, you know, central bank digital currencies, the kind of next evolution of kind of fiat currency. I wouldn't say the revolution, because let's face it, it's always going to be there in some manner or some form. But is it interesting that it was kind of a foreign concept, you know, a year ago, and 12 months later, European Central Bank is testing it. And now, just I think 2 weeks ago, Bank of England says they're building a framework to kind of support that. Is that something that's on kind of your radar as an interesting topic, something you want to get kind of into the debate or into the advisory part of it? Or are we going to kind of see how they figure it out and what we need to do to support it?
Clearly, this is going to be one of the biggest things to happen in sort of blockchain space. I mean, without sort of going into too much detail, I have met the BOE guys, you know, in the past, and really, really smart, switched on geezers, basically, that came in.
He's a smart one. Yeah.
I was slightly overwhelmed. I was definitely out of my depth. But no, I mean, they were taking a really interesting approach to it, and you can't blame them. So they basically, it's been on their radar for a long time, and they also acknowledge that effectively, you know, Bitcoin a day, the real volume that goes through is sort of like a large FTSE stock. So the market still is quite small. However, you know, even I think it was Mark Carney kind of said historically that, you know, if they were to release a sort of GBP stablecoin, it would probably be way better than all the normal fiat, and it would completely disrupt how everyone does things. So in terms of what's going to happen, I think, you know, it will happen. I mean, clearly there's a lot of benefits to making all currency digital. And it's not kind of out the realms of possibility to completely get rid of cash. You know, some countries have even done it, but it's going to take time. And we were chatting sort of internally what that infrastructure looks like. We do a lot with stable coins, but we have sort of some partnerships there, and we're still sort of unsure, and the providers are unsure of how this is going to work in the real world, especially when you look at, you know, what happened with Facebook's Libra. Basically, the Fed just went, no, you know, and we get that, because this affects real world stuff, so it needs to be done properly. But I've definitely got the confidence in the BOE and Rishi's announcement the other day was really positive. I think they're looking at it the right way. They're not going to rush into things. They're not going to rush to their death. And hopefully, you know, over the next probably 10 years, we'll start to see sort of the infrastructure slowly come in to sort of digitize money.
I think specifically you mentioned Libra there, which is a really good example. I suppose the only counter to that is like you had a private company that already has everyone's data. Let's just face it. Let's just call it everyone's data, not just the majority. They've got everything. Even when you're not using their app, they're still getting something out of you. But the, you know, the real problem with that, it relates with the e-money in its purest form, you know, who is the issuer? And when it's a private company issuing it, even if it's pegged against a multitude of different assets and currencies and it's going to be stable in X, Y, and Z, you're putting, you know, an exceptional amount of power into a private company's hands. And then they said, we're going to have this foundation and it's going to be run by other people. And it's like, but you're still kind of pulling the strings a little bit in the background. You could obfuscate it as much as you want, but it's very easy to see. The difference here is now we've got a central bank, you know, of one of the oldest financial institutions in the world that are, you know, really looking at the tech as well as the policy that kind of sits on top of that, which I think is probably the most interesting thing for me, is they're really kind of like, well, this is here, it is here to stay. There are a lot of advantages to it, but how do we push it in a positive way rather than how could it be taken advantage of?
It's really interesting to see as well. I mean, you mentioned obviously social media companies, you know, Facebook has data, and it's shown especially recently with the US election that, you know, it is also a partisan organization, let's face it. So clearly before we discuss sort of regulation for that specific use of a specific coin, I think we need to sort of step back, which is what it looks like to me Rishi's done. And he said, look, private coin issuers need to follow this set of regulatory frameworks and rules that we're about to set out. And then I probably think they're going to use that as a bit of a test case to see how it evolves, to see, you know, what happens. I know there's a lot of demand from sort of private companies to make some kind of GBP coin, which is probably easier than a euro coin because we don't have negative rates yet. But we're not quite there yet. We're quite excited to sort of support in any way we can that stuff. But I think, like I said, it's just going to take time. I don't know what you said. I don't know what kind of time horizon we're looking at.
Yeah, well, time horizon, anything in the next kind of 2 years would be a great achievement. Yeah. And that would kind of follow off the back of the digital yuan in China, what they've been experimenting with already. I think that kind of lends in, you know, quite nicely to, you know, this the whole kind of DeFi boom that's kind of come and it's kind of, you know, cooled off a little bit now. But it's still, you know, the, like you say, the people that have been here the longest, from 2017 to now and haven't fallen out during the winter, you know, the original ones there, like your Maker, you know, DAI, Compound, all those kind of products are still kind of there and they're still working. What's kind of your opinion or BCB's opinion on kind of, you know, DeFi yield generating for, you know, the crypto investor, but then also how can DeFi benefit, you know, the everyday investor that is just looking for yield?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question because yield is such a hot topic, because that's one of the areas that crypto can really outperform traditional finance. If you look at sort of kind of traditional hedge fund performance in a year, call it 5-6%, you know, in a sort of bad recent year. And yield can be sort of double that in sort of crypto assets on an annualized basis. And clearly there's this hunt for yield. Now, DeFi is great because it's basically a new thing people didn't really think about until recently. So it's yet another thing that crypto surprised us with. Now, we think it's still very early stage. The decentralized nature of a lot of it is going to cause some problems, certainly when you're looking at kind of its regulatory standing, how to actually employ it in sort of regulated companies. It's a bit shaky ground, especially if you build something and you plug some DeFi in, you know, are you going to get the regulator knocking on your door? That's sort of the big worry for firms. Now, the interesting subtext of all of this is, how do we legitimately use a mix of traditional and crypto assets to generate yield? That's something we're looking at really, really heavily. We have a project team on it, and we have a solution that's quite funky. And we're sort of in this wonderful, unique place to be able to give it. We're just sort of going through the testing stage now, but we're hoping to kind of roll that out fairly soon. And it's certainly the thing that the clients have been, you know, badgering us for.
Is that kind of that one click kind of in and out smart contract connection to the rest of the DeFi space, something like that?
It's not so much that. It's actually probably a lot more boring. it's
boring
more
can be cool.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, it a lot of it is sort of, you know, really hedging and managing underlying traditional assets. So let's face it. Okay, one thing we have a lot of in our company is sort of customer fiat deposits, normal fiat. You know, people want that to work for them. So it's how do we get that fiat into something useful? Make sure it's hedged. Make sure it's safe, secure. Make sure the counterparty risk is as low as possible. We use different providers to do different things, and that's sort of the hurdle to get over, which is a really simple hurdle, but it's still very funky. And you know, it would raise the eyebrows of a few normal companies. So you know, we can't then add a DeFi bit just yet. We think probably, you know, give it a year or two. Let's see how it pans out. Let's get the regulators comfortable with DeFi, and then we can maybe plug it in. But clearly yield's like the hot topic. And so it should be. You know, look at global rates. It's rubbish. Look what happened in COVID. Everyone just put money in dollar, and you know, they barely touched gold. It's like, we can do better than US dollar, guys.
Yeah.
So that's sort of kind of what we're looking at right in the near term. But it's so nice just to sort of get the immediate client feedback of what people want right now, what we can do. So that's sort of the good stuff to be part of.
So just to wrap up, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, what is possible in this space. And, you know, a lot of the stuff that sometimes comes out of the weeds is a lot of the negative stuff in the space. You know, what are some of the nice stories that you know of, just to kind of as a nice, you know, fluffy closing point?
Oh, there are actually loads. I'm really lucky. So a lot of people kind of come to us, and a lot of them say, "Wow, we didn't sort of know you existed." And I always say, you know, we like crypto's dirty little secret. And they come to us and just go, "Oh my goodness, you can solve all my problems that you have. Like, we needed banking, we need to be able to kind of trade effect." So really, it's just stories about kind of small businesses, startups that come to you, and we're able to sort of help them. And that's really good. And that's why we got into this, because we struggled ourselves and we wanted to kind of help people. And you know, we don't, the whole kind of like the Bitcoin bad story, we don't really see that, to be honest. I don't know about you. Am I being too naive for that?
No, not being too naive. I think there is, you know, for the good and the bad, I think the good definitely outbalances it. I think there's a lot of healthy innovation in the space. I think we're never going to see the end of scams. We're never going to see the end of people losing money. It is a very technical, very, you know, it starts off very anonymous before you really get to know the people behind the blockchain. And I think that's, you know, the same as any other space, even really developed markets like property, like FX, like anything else. There's still shadiness in those markets. Maybe they just don't get the airtime that crypto does, because we're a emerging market and an emerging tech, and there's never been anything like it in our generation. So I think it's all things rosy technically, and I think we should keep working towards that as a community.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the community was the first thing I noticed coming into the space. Like, everyone genuinely wants each other to succeed.
Yeah.
Everyone knows each other. It's wonderful, especially when you come from like the viper's nest of banking, where you have to, you wake up every morning, get the knives out your back, yeah, and then start your job. Sure. But yeah, it's great news.
So I think it's a good spot with which to end the podcast today. Ben, thank you very much for coming on the show, sharing your insight, what you guys are doing down there at BCB, your take on the industry and kind of where we're going. It's great to have you.
Jeff, thanks for being here.
Not a problem. And how do people get in touch? What's the best way?
Jump onto the website. There's a form you can fill in. That will come straight through to us, and we'll get back to you within a day.
Awesome. BCB is very active in the space as well, so make sure to check out their Twitter and their LinkedIn. And if you listen to this show and you might want to be on the show one day, you want to talk to fintech, crypto, blockchain, you got a cool project going on, or you're launching a startup, please give us a tweet at CoinPass Global. Drop us an email, podcast@coinpass.com. Thank you again to my guest Ben for being on the show, and I will see you all next time.